No, you tell it.
No, you.
I'm not telling it.
You should totally tell it.
Well, you should tell it.
No, you tell it. No, You Tell It is a series that switches up the storytelling. So each performer writes a true life tale and then, switching with a partner, performs the other person's story, giving everyone involved the chance to share their own stories and experience someone else's. Kicking off part two of our flyby show, host Ellie Dvorkin-Dunn shares some fun facts about teenage pilot Eleanor Smith before we hear the second set of true tales inspired by her story from the archives of the Greater Astoria Historical Society. Visit knowyoutellit.com to learn more about Eleanor Smith, our storytellers, and where to get your copy of their middle grade books.
Am I correct that Eleanor Smith, there used to be an award for Best American Female Pilot, and she beat out Amelia Earhart for that title in 1920, is that right? Fact number one that I remembered and pulled right out of my tushy. And number two, wait, was she also the first woman featured on a Wheaties box? And then no other woman appeared on a Wheaties box until Mary Lou Retton was in the Olympics in the 1980s. A person nobody knows, but now we all do. And now please welcome to the stage our second set of storytellers. Real legit round of applause for Ben Katzner and Brianna McDonald. Ben, when we met on the Zoom machine, we got put in a breakout room and you expressed some feelings about, you know, you're a stand-up comic, you're used to writing jokes, you're not used to writing narrative stories, you're not used to telling other people's stories. I just, since we're shouting things, everybody just say, Ben, it's going to be fly.
It's going to be fly.
See how much better you feel? See how the shouting helps?
Is that how I feel?
So you don't know this about me. I'm going to share something. One of my favorite topics to talk about is poop. Okay. I love to talk about it.
Love that for you.
And you wrote a book. Thank you for loving it for me. You wrote a book called Hello, My Name is Poop.
That is true. I did write that.
Tell us everything. Tell who's this book for? What's it about? Where can we get a copy?
Sure. So the book is about a kid who gets poop-based superpowers. And he learns, you know, he hones his skills and he has to decide whether, you know, he's going to be one of those heroes with responsibility or, you know, go the other way, I guess. And it's for generally it's middle grade readers, I guess. But I would argue, you know, there's some jokes in there for older people. There's a fun illustration. Honestly, the art and the artwork is absolutely fantastic. So, like, even if you don't want to read the book, like, I think you would enjoy looking at it.
Can you, like, name one poop-based superpower? Because I'm stuck on that phrase.
Sure.
Poop-based superpower.
He, at a certain point, he makes, like, a poop-nado, I believe. And it's been a while since I've written this. But, yeah.
It's so, like a portmanteau, like a tornado poop-nado.
Yeah.
And it's really disgusting. But I love it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's...
Because I love poop.
That's where we're going.
So I can't wait.
If you love poop, you should get this book.
That's a great elevator pitch. If you love poop, and who doesn't?
Shout out to all the poop lovers out there. I got you.
Amazing. Please enjoy Like Me or Not, written by Ben Katzner and performed by Brianna McDonald.
Like me or not, Raghav didn't even like me. He tolerated me, sure. He confided in me, yeah. He did that with everyone, though. In my mind, the level of radical acceptance and ignorance it takes to fully embrace someone as a close friend simply did not exist between us. We were both aspiring stand-up comedians, and comedy has a beautiful way of forcing people who typically wouldn't spend 2 minutes in the same room into spending years of their lives together. It's one of the few art forms where you'll see a jovial father of four share the stage with a deeply bitter 21-year-old in an open mic, and the only thing they have in common is thinking that they both crushed it up there. They did not. Raghav and I had more in common than most. We were both writers. We were both two dudes of color who grew up in Minnesota, and we were both shitsters online. I hadn't seen a comment section I couldn't troll, and he was a borderline genius troublemaker on Twitter. His handle is still @ACLUofficial on there, if there's any doubt this man commits to his craft. We could argue about anything. who we thought was cute, what we thought was funny, bands we considered trash, and the people we considered trashier. We didn't just think we were right. We both knew it. Even though everyone who knows anything understands that anyone who thinks they're always right is usually wrong. Every conversation turned into debate. Many of those debates turned bitter. I spent a lot of nights thinking about how most days it doesn't feel like my friend Raghav likes me. And some days, I wasn't sure I liked him all that much either. Maybe we fought too much. Maybe we were too competitive. We were definitely too similar. Whatever the reasoning, we'd wrecked and rebuilt our relationship enough that I couldn't get over the thought that Raghav, even if he said he did, didn't like me very much. So when the people he did like, who loved him in return, tasked me with finding out if their best friend was dead, I'm ashamed to admit I was annoyed. Why me? Raghav doesn't even like me, I thought. No one had heard from him that day, a rarity, so multiple people reached out to me to see if maybe I'd been in contact. I checked my own messages, noticing my attempt at an olive branch the night before garnered no response. At the time, it didn't raise any alarms, but upon knowing that even the people that Raghav reached out to regularly hadn't heard from him, I felt my anxiety rising. I stepped away from my desk at a temp job I hated to do something I hated even more, ask for help. I texted mutual friends to see if they've heard from our boy Gav. Nah, nope, nothing, why? Pretending I wasn't panicking, I reached out to one of Raghav's roommates to ask her to do the unthinkable. Check and see if my friend was alive. I remember mumbling, "This is so dumb. Why are we the people doing this?" Certain that both myself and the person I was dragging into this ordeal had probably been the butt of at least a couple malicious group chat jokes. "Will you stay on the phone with me while I check?" Raghav's roomie, Danielle, asked. My brain screamed, "I don't want to be on the line. This sucks. I'm supposed to be working. One of his real friends should be on the line with you, in the room with you. He doesn't even like me. And if I had a guess, he probably doesn't like you either." "Yeah, of course," I half-heartedly mustered. My response shook any confidence either of us had. Another friend I let down that day. But Danielle is stronger than me and pressed on. We didn't speak as she inched her way down the steps towards Raghav's room. She called his name. Nothing. She knocked on his door. Nothing. "I don't want to go in there." The tone of her voice begged me to release her from this cruel favor. "I'm right here. I'm so sorry, but we need to know. But I'm right here with you," I replied. Danielle cracked the door and shattered any remaining mystery surrounding the morning all at once. "He's here," she said, her voice not even loud enough to be considered a whisper. "He's not moving. Or breathing. No pulse. Cold to the touch. My friend was dead. He didn't even like me. Now, I'll never be able to change that fact." In the moment, all I could do was push my feelings down and press forward. My friend was dead. Now there's work to be done. After the phone call with Danielle, I left more thinking, what's the rush? The sooner I get there, the realer this gets. By the time I arrived, a group of mutual friends were solemnly hanging outside the front door to Raghav's apartment. A gaggle of stand-up comedians like Raghav. Some cried, some looked lost, and a few tried cracking some of the worst jokes any of us had ever heard. I really appreciated it. No one was going inside. It was like an invisible barrier was blocking them from the truth. Their friend was dead. The arrival of paramedics was too much for the group to handle, so they decided to go for a walk. Get out of the way. Get their heads together, even if their hearts might be broken in half. I wished I could betray my programming and walk right alongside them. Walk away from reality a little bit longer. Preserve the scraps of peace I felt, knowing I wasn't the only one hurting in this moment. But I'm a contrarian by nature, so I stayed. As a handful of Raghav's closest friends left to collect themselves, Danielle and I stayed behind. It was her apartment, and she'd found the body. She couldn't leave. There were questions to be answered. I felt like I'd already let her down that day. I couldn't live with myself if I did it again. Neither of us felt like we were the right people for the job, because after all, as far as I was concerned, Raghav didn't even like us. Over the next few hours, I resented everyone not in the room with us. The ones that took a walk, the people gawking outside, the people that had no idea. We were begging for help to lighten the load. Help never came. There were so many questions we didn't have answers to. From paramedics to medical examiners to Raghav's sister. I still remember her crying. I can't even remember her name. She lived in New York, but we'd never met before because why would you introduce your sister to someone you barely even like? At least that's what I thought at the time. It was a hard day. Harder days followed. Selfishly, I was excited to have less responsibility. I didn't want to call his parents. I didn't want to tell our wider friend group. I had no interest in figuring out what to do with the things Raghav had left behind. Intellectually, I knew that now the responsibility was dropped squarely on the backs of the people who loved Raghav the most. His family, his closest friends, the people he liked. I felt guilty for that, too. Days passed and somber milestones approached. A funeral. I'd never been to a funeral in New York, and this one made me realize that if I did die in New York City, I need an addendum in my will that says I get to be buried in Jersey. At least there'd be more space. Next came a celebration of life at a bar where people showed up to pay their respects and do drugs in the bathroom. It pissed me off, but honestly, Goff probably would have thought it was funny. He probably would have DM'd me to talk shit about the people who didn't show, and honestly, some of the ones that had the audacity to pay their respects. I would have engaged because I also love to talk shit. Then we would laugh. No matter where our relationship was at, it always felt like we were at our best when we had a common target to tear apart. That's what friends do, and that's what we were, whether he liked me or not.
Hi, Brianna.
Hi.
That was a beautiful reading.
Thank you.
Nice work. Brianna is also an author of middle grade stories, always fiction. This is your first nonfiction experience.
This is my first nonfiction,
correct.
Yes.
Is your book called Hello, My Name is P? What is the name
maybe,
of, what are the names of your
one,
books?
But not yet. Pepper's Rules for Secret Sleuthing, The Secrets of Stone Creek, and my next one coming out in October is Galaxy Jones and the Space Pirates.
So amazing. And The Secrets of Stone Creek, I believe, is going to be offered. Is that the one that's going to be offered as two different? Okay. Anyway, you'll have an opportunity to win copies of these books as prizes, but you can also buy them. I'm going to buy one of each for my 9-year-old son who loves murder mystery. And you told me they're about murder, they're murder mystery. So very, very exciting. And I feel like I made a note of something. One of the books, the protagonist grew up reading and wants to be one of the 100 of the world's greatest female adventurers, right? Did you just say that? Or no, you didn't say that.
No, you said that.
I said that. I was listening and now I'm reading and I'm like, did she just say that? But you didn't. So it just ties in beautifully with Eleanor Smith and the theme for tonight and everything.
Yes.
So thank you for accepting the challenge for writing a nonfiction story for us today. Switching it up for our final story, here is Macarons, written by Brianna McDonald and performed by Ben Katz.
Last January, I Googled Couples Classes NYC, confirmed macarons were gluten-free, and booked me and my wife a chilly late-night adventure in the East Village. We just wrapped up a long and frustrating holiday season where, in my melodramatic but arguably kind of romantic mind, we'd both been torn apart like star-crossed lovers, forced to celebrate separately to accommodate the schedules of other family members who, unlike us, were not expected to uncouple for the holidays. Perhaps it was because we'd been together for over a decade, I often got the feeling that people still saw us 18, two kids, and puppy dog love. Or perhaps it was because holidays were for real families, and we were just good old gal pals with an 8-pound mutt where a tiny human should be. Whatever it was, I was feeling burnt out, bitter, and determined to make up for lost time. The class took place in a narrow kitchen lined with steel tables that accommodated 4 people each. Couples filed inside from the cold, possessing the awkward, uncertain energy of a second or third Hinge date. We'd appeared to be the oldest couple there. Apparently, every other New Yorker figured out how to bake macarons before 30, and we were behind. A Connecticut couple with what can only be described as strong yacht vibes joined our table, and the class started shortly after, directed by a pastry chef who wore a look that conveyed she was done with everyone's bullshit before we'd even started. Despite the fact that I'd been the one to pick the class, Melissa was more in her element than me. With her eyebrows knit in concentration and dressed in her white undershirt and one of the bakery's black aprons, I suddenly understood why straight girls were so obsessed with Carmi from The Bear. It's disgustingly sappy, but a story about Melissa wouldn't be honest if I didn't say that every little moment like this made me fall more deeply in love with her than the moment before. Like an anchor sinking peacefully into the warm, seemingly bottomless waters below. I love that she piped macarons with the same expert precision she acquired during her surgery rotations. I love the familiar kindness in her eyes when I inevitably piped mismatched blobs of bladder onto the template, and the way she laughed when the chef assured me that it was okay, that she'd just run a class for kids and they'd struggled with this part too. I love how we giggled and spoke with our eyes while the couple across from us stumbled through stilted small talk, the familiarity that came with years, accompanied by genuinely liking each other in the kind of way that was likely responsible for our families treating us like silly kids rather than a married couple. When everything else in life was frustrating or disappointing or the opposite of what I had intended, this, at least, was always good. That's what I was thinking. Right up until the moment Melissa straightened up, reached for a water bottle and asked me, "Do you know how long this thing goes?" I knew from the way she gulped her water and glanced in a tired, anxious way at the wall clock that she was starting to feel unwell. Over the past couple of years, I'd learned to catalog these symptoms in my mind, so the smallest pinch of her brow or downward tilt of her lips could alert me to the impending threat. It started with a celiac diagnosis, which we'd taken in stride because there was no other option, really. And we still got to have wonderful things like macarons. But like everyone in the bakery that night, autoimmune diseases tend to travel in pairs. Her undifferentiated connective tissue disorder, a mouthful to say and a handful to live with, made her joints ache, body throb, and brain fog, even despite her meds. I told Melissa there was still over an hour left. It was an answer her body didn't want to hear. She pressed her hands against the base of her back and leaned forward, bending her knees. It was as though she had transformed since we first arrived. The giggles and her steady movements washed away like chalk in the rain. "I don't think I'll last that long," she said. And I knew it wasn't empty words. She'd left early once when we'd seen Phantom on Broadway. We'd gone because I had wanted to see it, and the dog needed a walk anyway, and sitting alone in the dark theater wasn't the worst thing in the world. But like all the things in life, I would have preferred to have shared it with her. I ran over the day in my mind, imagining what we could have done differently that would have ensured we were always one step ahead of a potential flare of her illness. We met before the class for dinner and drinks at a nearby Mexican restaurant. The margaritas were perfectly balanced, the cauliflower taco was to die for, and I'd savored the opportunity to catch up before we were surrounded by strangers in a tiny bakery. But perhaps if we'd skipped dinner, she would have had more energy for the class. Everything is a negotiation these days. Measured risks, carefully timed schedules, needs before wants, and compromising on compromise. I assured her she could leave the class early if she needed to. But secretly, I dreaded the possibility of standing alone on our side of the table, finishing the macarons by myself as if I'd Googled the words macaron workshop instead of couples class. Mercifully, the instructor chose that moment to announce we were taking a break. You can stay here if you'd like, she said, or we have a back garden if you'd like some fresh air. Melissa and I exchanged a glance before heading to the small, fenced-in backyard. A semicircle of chairs lined a barren fire pit, and Melissa wasted no time in plopping down into one of the seats. None of the other couples came to the back garden. It was just us Queens girls and the rats, like God intended. You can go if you need to go, I said again. I can finish filming it myself. Melissa took a deep breath of cool January night air, then she shook her head. No, I should be okay. Sitting is helping. Plus, you can't be trusted alone with a piping bag, she smirked. Dropping her voice as she said, I can't believe she compared you to her kids' class right to your face. I groaned, hanging my head in my hands. No, I deserve it. You really did. We joked back and forth for a while, Melissa sipping her water, sinking further into the chair, and eventually she rose, hands pressed to her back as she gave a nod of approval. I'm ready to go back in. Part of me felt as though her exhaustion had transferred to me. The threat of her leaving and all the implications it held of future dates spent half alone, of canceled commitments and lopsided compromises, having zapped the easy joy I had earlier in the evening. We went back inside, shedding our coats, tying back on our aprons. I looked at her again in her apron, in her white t-shirt, this time thinking less about the bear and more about how thin she'd gotten over the past year, how fickle and traitorous her joints and back had become when previously Melissa had been the steadiest thing in my world. But she was still there, and there were macarons to finish. So finish the macarons we did. We ended up with two boxes worth, some that could pass as professional and some that had been formed and filled by me. Melissa was in a sleepy haze by the time we wandered to the train station. When we reached the 7 platform at Grand Central, she was tight enough to sit on a bench without questioning what else may have occupied her seat over the past 24 hours. As we waited for the train, Melissa popped open the first of the two boxes and we began eating and ranking the macarons by their fillings. An old man approached us, eyeing the box with interest. He cocked an eyebrow in silent question. Melissa smiled. Breaking one of our train station rules, do not engage with strangers, especially at night, and passed the macaron into his hands. He took a bite and walked off happily. I felt a surge of affection for her then, for being the kind of person who gave without hesitation, for being the kind of person who, when balancing her body's pain against the pain of leaving, had found a way to stay with me that night. Then, in a blur of motion, the old man reappeared in front of us and reached with an open palm into the box. Fingers extended like the metal hooks in an arcade claw machine, he grasped onto as many macarons as he could. He cradled the bounty to his chest, then dashed off across the platform with his spoils. Melissa and I stared, dumbfounded, at the remaining macarons, all of them abruptly made inedible by the touch of a strange old man. Well then, Melissa pressed the lid shut. He must have really liked the macaron I gave him. The train rolled into the station, and I stared back at the box of spoiled macarons we were leaving behind. We'd spent hours in that bakery crafting them with care, balancing her needs against our wants to get to this point in the evening. I imagined we could take them with us if we just waited to open the box until we got home, or if we stood on the edge of the train platform instead of taking a bench. All the what-ifs and if I had only swarmed around me like pesky flies. Then the train rushed into the station, the motion sending my hair flying, my coat whipping at my knees. Melissa and I turned away from the box of macarons at the same time, our eyes meeting one another as the train rolled up to the platform. All at once, we burst into a fit of giggles. Heads back, hair whipping against our open mouths, our laughter so loud and unrestrained that it carried above the rumbling of the train. Perhaps that first box of macarons had never been ours. Perhaps it was always meant to be that old man's. I didn't mind, though. We still had the second box, and that was enough for me.
That's it. Thanks for joining us for this installment of Know You Tell It.
Visit us on the web at knowyoutellit.com.